This is Patient Care Theory 2, Unit 6, Part 1, Neonatal Resuscitation, or What to Do with Dead Babies. Yeah, I recorded that. I might have to list it as explicit, so as not to offend anyone. All right, so the number of pregnant patients you'll transport is relatively small compared to other calls. The number of deliveries you'll do is smaller still, but whenever we get called to a woman who's in labor, we always have to be mentally prepared to either deliver a baby and resuscitate a baby, or resuscitate a baby who's already delivered. Some dispatch centers now have change the response for women in labor to a code 3 call, no longer a code 4 call. And I'm not sure that's such a good idea, but it was done because the vast majority of labor and delivery calls don't deliver before we get there. But I remember shortly after they changed that protocol, and we were on our way to a woman who was in labor. She was, this was her second baby, and we got diverted to a code 4 for a rectal bleed. And turns out mom delivered on the kitchen floor. And when we got to the rectal bleed, it was hemorrhoids with a spot of blood on their diapers. Elderly patient, sorry, I should explain. On their depends. So definitely not a code 4 call. Probably more like a CTAS 4 call and a code 1 deferable call. So that was a little upsetting. So the epidemiology of for the need for resuscitation in the newborn is it's about 1% in hospital. It's about 6% of field deliveries that require some form of life support. And that's because we don't get called for pregnant moms very often. Most of the time they make their own way to the hospital, but occasionally they call 911 for various reasons. Maybe complications in the pregnancy, maybe early labor, mom's alone, and never judge mom for calling an ambulance. If I was mom and I was alone, I would not want to take a cab or an Uber to the hospital. I'd want professionals with me. The incidence of complications increases as the birth weight decreases. So about 80% of underweight newborns, so under 1,500 grams or 1.5 kilos, or in American terms, 3 pounds, 6 ounces, will require resuscitation. That doesn't necessarily mean CPR, but probably oxygenation and ventilation, or one or the other. So babies at risk, in terms of antepartum factors, that would include things like multiple gestations, inadequate prenatal care, mother's age under 16 or over 35, history of prenatal morbidity or mortality, so past issues with pregnancies. Post-term gestation, we're usually talking a week to 2 weeks post-gestation. Drugs or medication that mom may be on or may be taking illicit drugs. Toxemia, you remember what toxemia pregnancy is, right? Hypertension, diabetes. So intrapartum factors include premature labor, so intrapartum meaning the delivery phase. Premature delivery means that there's a good chance the baby's going to require some level of resuscitation. What's your biggest concern, initial concern with a newborn that's premature in your initial handling of that baby? Your biggest initial concern, yeah. Well, even before they breathe, or we even assess breathing before that. What's the first thing we do when a baby's born? We don't stimulate. We stimulate, but that's secondary to what we need to do. Dry and warm. Dry and warm, right? So keeping them warm is critical, right? If you don't keep them warm, they get cold. When they get cold, they get into severe distress. So hypothermia is a very, very serious thing. They become hypoglycemic. Hypoglycemia can be life-threatening. So if they're premature, we got to dry and warm them. And of course, you know, breathing is critical, but it starts first with drying and warming and getting rid of the wet towels. And replace them with warm ones, putting baby to breast. Other intrapartum factors that will influence the need for resuscitation include meconium staining, ruptured membranes, particularly if the membranes ruptured more than 24 hours ago, narcotics within 4 hours, abnormal presentations, prolapse, cord, or bleeding. Narcotics within 4 hours is more of an in-hospital issue, unless we're talking about, you know, mom being on illicit drugs or she's on prescription narcotics for chronic pain for something. Abnormal presentation, prolapse, cord, or bleeding. So pre-delivery oxygenation, we can, if we're worried about a complicated delivery, we can give mom oxygen by nasal prongs or by non-rebreather mask, and that oxygen will get delivered to the baby. If you're going to give oxygen by nasal prongs, I would recommend a 6-liter flow minimum. And nasal prongs is just a little easier because it's more difficult for mom to talk. But if you're really, really worried, NRB is fine. About 10% of newborns will require some assistance to begin breathing. And when I say assistance, that might be just drying and warming, that kind of stimulation. About 1% in the hospital require extensive resuscitation. So babies are wet when they're born. Heat loss is extensive. They lose most of their heat through their head. And so we want to maintain temperature as close to normal as possible. So we warm, we clear the airway, we dry all simultaneously. In the neonatal resuscitation program, and I wouldn't recommend taking the NERP program or the pediatric advanced life support program or the advanced cardiac life support program until you've been out of school, you graduated, and you know it's been a few months or maybe a year before you take these courses. You want to get some experience under your belt. They're weekend courses, but they require 3 to 6 months of studying. So you got to get the textbook and you got to do a lot of studying because you're evaluated at the physician level, basically. So I don't recommend it until you're out of school and working. But the NERP program is a great, great program. I do recommend it once you're out and working. And they use this inverted pyramid system where they describe all newborns are going to need warming, positioning, the airway clearing is just a PRN thing now. Used to be we routinely suction the mouth and the nose, now we don't. Drying, stimulating to breathe. Supplemental O2, very infrequently needed. PPV, if they require PPV, we'll talk about why, under what circumstances. We get them PPV without O2. The only reason they get oxygen without PPV would be if they're cyanosed, like central cyanosis, and it's persistent cyanosis after, you know, a couple of minutes. But their heart rate's good and they're otherwise vigorous. We'll talk about what vigorous means. And then we'll look at the criteria for PPV. Rarely, rarely, rarely needed are chest compressions, and if they do require chest compressions, then we add O2 to PPV. And then lastly, medications. Rare is that the case, unless the baby is born, already born VSA. So immediately post-delivery, we want to determine if the baby's vigorous. That means, so your first focus for the first 30 seconds should be drying and warming. That's it, right? We're not really doing assessment. We're drying and warming in the hopes that baby will become vigorous within that 30-second period. So vigorous, by definition, means strong respiratory effort, good muscle tone, and a heart rate over 100 beats per minute. Have you guys done any newborn resuscitation in the lab yet? Okay. So how do you check for heart rate? Initially, you might auscultate an apical heart rate, so stethoscope just below the left nipple, and auscultate for 6 seconds and multiply by 10. That's the easiest way to do it. Count the number of beats in 6 seconds, multiply by 10. Yeah.
I know in the hospital they use like a smaller stethoscope.
Yeah.
Does the size make a difference? Like more focused if it's smaller for
the
baby?
Yeah, well the smaller one hears the higher pitch is better.
Yeah.
So if you've got a stethoscope with the diaphragm and the bell, just use the bell.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just gotta remember to use it. But you can still auscultate baby's heart sounds with the regular part of the stethoscope. So, you know, if you're nervous, you forget, it's no biggie. Getting back to this. So heart rate, your initial calculation might be based on auscultation of apical heart sounds. But after that, what I would do is very quickly get your partner to hook up the cardiac monitor. Now we carry pediatric size electrodes, and I would use those. Make sure the lead wires are attached to the electrodes before you stick them on the baby. So you put the electrodes on first and then try to push the buttons on. You know, it's not very comfortable for the baby. But if you can't find the pediatric electrodes when you're in a panic, just use the adult size, that's fine too. So we resuscitate if you answer no to any of the following. If there's meconium in the airway, we resuscitate. If they're not breathing or crying, we resuscitate. If they don't have good muscle tone, we resuscitate. If they're not pink in color, we might oxygenate. So babies are very wet. We need to dry and warm. And so we take 30 seconds to do that. Remove wet towels, place baby on the mom's chest. Hat on the head, keep them warm. Cut the cord at the 2-minute mark. Allow baby to breastfeed if mom's receptive to breastfeeding. What's the benefit of breastfeeding? The immediate benefit to mom and the baby, but especially mom. Yeah, immune. Yeah. Yeah, so it releases oxytocin, which reduces postpartum hemorrhage. Yeah, so it stimulates the release of oxytocin, reduces postpartum hemorrhage, so it's good for mom. So goals of resuscitation: ensure warmth, expansion of the lungs, increased PaO2, adequate cardiac output. So signs and symptoms that would be concerning would be central cyanosis. So it's very common to have blue hands and feet. And for that to persist for, you know, many minutes, but facial cyanosis or head-to-toe cyanosis over a couple of minutes or so is a concern. Bradycardia is a very ominous sign in babies. It's usually a sign of pre-arrest. So heart rate less than 120 in a newborn is very serious. Less than 100 requires positive pressure ventilation without O2. And less than 60 requires CPR, but we're going to, even if the baby presents initially with a heart rate below 60, we're going to provide PPV for 30 seconds first before we reassess pulse and decide whether or not we're going to do CPR. And poor muscle tone would be another one. We don't take blood pressures in newborns because there isn't an ambulance in the province or the country that I'm aware of that carries a blood pressure cuff small enough to even test blood pressure in newborns. We have them small enough to test blood pressures in 1-year-olds, 2-year-olds, but we don't have neonatal cuffs except on the air ambulance. So we don't worry a lot about blood pressure. We look at skin color, tone. We look to see if they're vigorous, essentially, heart rate, right? Those are the key things. If you were able to get a blood pressure on a newborn, you'd probably be looking at a blood pressure of 50 systolic. That would be about normal for a newborn. If the baby's born apneic, we're going to provide PPV right away, no question. Now, there's something called primary apnea, which is where newborns are tachypneic, and then they have an apneic period, and stimulation is usually enough to get them to resume breathing. But if they have a second apneic period, they call that secondary apnea, and no amount of stimulation is going to help, so those babies require PPV, assisted ventilation, for a little while. So indication for PPV include apnea, gasping respirations, heart rate less than 100, persistent central cyanosis despite 100% oxygen over a minute or two. And is considered the single most effective step in resuscitating the compromised newborn. So here's the thing, unlike an adult, if you have to resuscitate a newborn, it's all gonna happen in under 5 minutes. An adult, you're gonna resuscitate for 35 minutes to an hour if you're working with an ACP crew, or maybe 20 minutes or so if you're a PCP crew. But a newborn, it's all going to happen in less than 5 minutes. So you got to work really fast. You have to be really focused. You have to be really careful about what you're doing. And as a team leader, you have to decide who's going to do what. As a team leader, you're going to do almost everything. But if the kid requires PPV, I would get your partner to do that. And if you're the partner who has to do PPV, you want to be really focused on what you're doing, because those lungs are really, really tiny. We use a neonatal BVM. Have you seen the neonatal BVMs? Okay. Newborns only need about 25 mLs. Yeah, so it's just thumb and index finger, a little tiny squeeze of the bag. And how do you know you're ventilating them? Look at the chest. Look at the chest wall rise. That's really your focus. If the chest isn't rising, the airway may not be positioned properly. I'm probably not even going to stick an OPA in. The OPA will be an afterthought. If someone's there and they can open up the bag and provide me with a newborn OPA, great, I'll take it, I'll stick it in. But my focus is going to be PPV. Like, you can't be fumbling around looking for stuff. So characteristics of an infant bag valve mask, what's the one distinctive feature in a infant and pediatric BVM? Yeah, Matt? Yeah, it's a pressure valve, yeah, the blow-off valve, yeah. So a neonatal BVM will hold typically about 200 to 250 mLs, pediatric up to 750. And newborns only require 15 to 25 mLs. It's almost nothing. And when we do PPV, typically we deliver it without oxygen. The pressure relief valve is set really low at 30 to 40 centimeters of wire. Now, that's not a lot of pressure. Airway pressure in an adult is probably a little bit higher than that. So you would require, that's why we don't have blow-off valves on adult BVMs, but there's always going to be some resistance to ventilation, either lung compliance, lung musculature, if there's resistance, that air won't go in the lungs, it'll come out the blow-out valve. Now, in a newborn resuscitation, we will leave that valve alone, and if air comes out of the valve, it's probably because the head's not adequately positioned. And positioning the head in a newborn is going to be a little bit tricky. So we want to find an appropriate size mask. We test the valve very quickly before we do BVM resuscitation on a newborn. So you put the mask on your hand and just squeeze the bag and make sure the blow-off valve is actually functioning properly. There's a different size masks. It's getting the head position is really the key. And take a look at these three diagrams here and tell me which one you think is the most appropriate head position for that newborn. Now just keep in mind that with newborns, the trachea is very flexible, like those cartilaginous rings are not fully formed, so it's like a tube that collapses on itself if you hyperextend the head. So which of those three positions do you think is appropriate? Okay, so Nikita says A. How many agree with A? How many think B? How many think C? So we got a third of you committed to A, the rest of you are chicken. A is correct. B is neutral, and the airway is not clear that way. So what you want is the structures to line up. Look at the mouth, and the structures line up like that. C is hyperextended, that's too much, and the trachea collapses. The only time you might put something under the shoulders of a patient when you're doing airway management is in a newborn, because the occiput is comparatively large in newborns and infants. And so you might put a little towel roll underneath the shoulders. All right. So clearing the airway, a couple of ways to do that. So if there's no meconium, we just leave the airway alone, unless there are really excessive secretions. And if airway is present, we're going to use either bulb suction or delete suction. This is called delete suction. You might think it's gross, but this section of tubing goes in the baby's mouth, and you suck with your own mouth on this end. None of it goes in your mouth, don't worry. It just goes into that tube. but you're using the power of your own mouth to suction that baby out, which sounds odd, but it actually gives you a truer sense of just how much you're suctioning, whereas with the suction unit, it may be difficult to gauge the suction level. If ACPs are there, and there's meconium staining, they may actually do deep suctioning and using something called a meconium aspirator. They put an endotracheal tube right into the trachea and will suction the newborn's airway out. So that's what a meconium aspirator looks like. They'll do laryngoscopy, put a tube in, attach this meconium aspirator to it and the suction tube into that, and then just intermittently close off that open valve and suction the airway. If you're working with an ACP and that's what they're doing, what you want to have on standby is an open bottle of sterile water so the ACP can drop that suction tubing into the sterile water, clear it out, and then go back into the airway if they need to. So here's some mask sizes. Take a look closely at these masks and see which one you think has the best fit, A, B, or C. So how many vote A? Oh, good. I'm seeing some commitment. So A is the correct answer. So A is, the seal is over the nose and under the chin. B, there's a bit of a leak at the chin. And C, the nose isn't quite covered. So A is the correct answer. Good. Which position here for bag valve mass ventilation do you think is the most appropriate, A, B, or C? Are you sensing a theme here? Yeah, it's A. Okay, so let me talk a little bit about A. Could you ventilate from the side like this? Sure, if you're a seasoned paramedic, you could probably do it. Can you do it on a mannequin? Easily. Mannequins are easy to ventilate because they're stiff plastic, right? Real people, you try to ventilate and they go like this. Air goes everywhere. So a couple of reasons to be behind the head. One, it's the best position to be in to get a good seal and put the head in the appropriate position. Number two, it gets you out of the way of everything else that needs to go on. If chest compressions need to happen, if ECG electrodes need to go on, if you need to start an IV, then you're out of everyone else's way when you're in position A behind the head. So B and C are not appropriate. And if I ever walk into the lab, and it's open lab, and I ever see any of you standing at the side doing bag valve mass ventilation, I'm gonna do a Professor Snape and hit you on the back of the head, just so you know.
The doctor made me come to the side at the hospital.
Did he?
Yeah, I was at the head like that.
Yeah.
He said, no, come to the side.
Oh, yeah, that's weird.
Harder.
Yeah, kind of a doctor is that anyway?
Yeah,
clearly does not.
Yeah.
I call that. I call that academic amnesia. See, he's been doing it so long, he's so skilled at it. To him, that's not a big thing. It's not a big deal. Yeah, it's awkward. It is awkward from the side. So I mean. Is it the end of the world? Is it? No, but I wouldn't recommend it. Okay, so indications for neonatal resuscitation. So under 30 days of age, LOA, heart rate, respiratory rate, systolic blood pressure, other non applicable, no contraindications. So let's look at the algorithm. So like I said, all of this happens really quickly. If you, when we run another cardiac arrest workshop, if you get the chance to attend with us, we'll go over neonatal resuscitation over and over again. It's really just doing things in 30-second blocks. So dry and warm in 30 seconds, assess for vigor. If the heart rate's under 100, no matter where it is under 100, PPV for 30 seconds, reassess heart rate and vigor. If the heart rate's under 60 at that point, we do chest compression for 30 seconds and then reassess. Right? So that's it in a nutshell. So term gestation, a good muscle tone, breathing or crying, yes, okay. Warmth, dry, supportive care, that's it. If no to that, we provide warmth, position, airway dry, stimulate, reposition, evaluate heart rate. hook up the cardiac monitor quickly. SpO2, we do on the right thumb or the right hand, or sometimes the right palm, depending on what kind of adapter you have. Pediatric pulse oximetry probes are usually have you seen them? The flexible ones, and it has a light and a sensor at the other end, and you can put them around the palm of the hand in a newborn. But we always do it on the right side because there's a ductus, a vessel, between the aortic arch and the pulmonary artery, and it's patent at birth. And so you're going to get a mix of venous and arterial blood in the left arm. So we always do pulse oximetry in the right arm. We call it a preductal pulse oximetry. So always do it in the right arm. That's a great, easy test question, right? So pulse oximetry on the right side. Yeah. Oh, the right side?
Well, it's on the right hand only. I'm like, that seems counterintuitive. Why?
Yeah, and she didn't know.
I don't even know. We just do it.
Yeah. Now you know, preductal, patent ductus arteriosus. Now, the first pulse oximetry reading you get in a newborn, not unusual for SpO2s to be as low as 50. Give it 10 minutes. No biggie. But if they're low sat and cyanos, then that's a concern, right? But we'd always do a preductal SpO2. Yeah, it's too bad we didn't get a chance to cover this before you went in birthing. Are you going back there? No? How many of you have still yet to go into the birthing unit? Okay, lots of you. So now you know, preductal, right? Good. Preductal. All right, so if they're breathing, at that point, if they're breathing and their heart rate's 100 beats per minute or greater, then just supportive care. But if not, then we provide PPV using room air only. And then we reassess. And if the heart rate is greater than 60 and less than 100, we continue PPV. But if it's less than 60, then we start chest compressions. And best chest compressions, you can do two fingers, the bottom of the sternum. Thumb over thumb is a better method, better cardiac output, thumb over thumb. So hands around the chest and thumb over thumb. That makes sense? And that's what it looks like. Just above the xiphoid. And that's the alternative. That head position doesn't look good to me. It looks like a neutral position. You can see the towel on the head. But less than 60, continue chest compressions. Greater than 60, discontinue compressions. Or 60 or more, discontinue. But if it's between 60 and 99, we do PPV, continue PPV. Oxygenation, if the baby has persistent central cyanosis, but otherwise has a heart rate of 100 or greater, then there are a couple of ways to deliver oxygen. One, pediatric simple face mask, or take an oxygen tubing and cup it in between your thumb and your index finger at about a 10-liter flow. And a couple of inches away will give you 40% FiO2. An inch away gives you 60%, and half an inch gives you 80%. There you go. Are you going to be taking a measuring tape and figuring that out? Probably not. So now the APGAR score. APGAR score does not tell you whether you need to resuscitate the baby. It's really about whether the baby's vigorous or not, right? But an APGAR score is just, if you're able to do it on the scene, I think that's great, but only do it if you've got enough hands on deck. You can get an APGAR app. There are free APGAR apps. I would avoid one with pop-up ads just because it's a distraction. But if you can get a free app and you can just hand that off to a medic who's standing there and not doing anything to check off the APGAR scores at birth, then that's great. Now, there's a test question on APGAR, but it's not on the scoring. You just need to know what APGAR stands for. Okay, I think it's a short answer question. So it doesn't determine the need for resuscitation, just qualifies the newborn's condition and to provide ongoing information about their status and response to resuscitation. So it's done at 1 minute and 5 minutes, and if the score is less than 7, then it's done every 5 minutes for 20 minutes. So this criteria you should be familiar with, 1 minute and 5 minute. If the score is less than 7, it's done every 5 minutes for 20 minutes. So these are the key things. Respirations, vigor, heart rate, color, and this should be evaluated in a cycle. So key questions, is there meconium? Is the baby breathing or crying? Good respiratory efforts? Is there good muscle tone? The baby's color is good. Great. If no to any of the above, we provide resuscitation. And we only provide O2 when we provide compressions. Indication for PPV, apnea, gasping respirations, persistent central cyanosis despite giving them high flow O2, heart rate less than 100. In most cases, PPV is the farthest you'll have to go along down the resuscitation line for these newborns. So, we've already talked about this. Things to remember, there's more than one patient, right? So we have to think about mom, communicate with mom, tell mom what we're doing, talk with the family. Parents' responses will vary. But just remember that parents in any crisis situation or family members in any crisis situation will have indelible memories about what happened, about what was said. And so, you know, when I talk about dark sense of humor and coping strategies, that's fine here, that's fine at the station, but it's not fine on the scene when other people are listening, right? So you have to be careful. And I've worked with medics and firefighters and police who joked around on the scene, and it's not appropriate, and it's not professional. And family members will never forget the words that were said. And sometimes they may not remember who said them, they'll think that you said them. But they'll remember what was said. What else? So ensure someone's caring for the siblings. Don't raise any false hopes. We want to stay calm, professional at all times, stay focused, and follow protocols and transport. I forgot. I've got a little video here. This was, there's some mistakes in this neonatal resuscitation that was made. These are from students from many, many years ago. I'll play this little video for you. So yeah, I hope you enjoyed that video on neonatal resuscitation. Just to recap, the key things are, everything's broken down in 30 seconds, right? So the baby's delivered, your initial 30 seconds are dry and warm, get baby to mom's chest, unless the baby appears to be flaccid and you think you're anticipating resuscitation. Cut the cord at what time? 2 minutes. Once the baby's dry and warm, do an assessment of vigor, right? Adequate respirations, like a good cry would tell you is adequate respirations, good muscle tone, heart rate of at least 100. The heart rate's under 100, we do what next? PPV for how long?
30 seconds,
and then we reassess vigor again. We reassess vigor, right? So we reassess heart rate, a cardiac monitor hopefully is on at that point, and let's say the heart rate's at 80 beats per minute. Continue PPV. What if the heart rate's less than 60? CPR. So chest compressions with PPV. And what do we do with PPV now that we're doing chest compressions? 3-to-1 ratio and what else? Add O2, yeah. So if we're doing chest compression, add O2. Now, if you ever get a neonatal resuscitation, you're going to be scared. It's natural to be scared. You're going to make mistakes. It's natural to make mistakes. So just talk to each other. Walk each other through it. So you're checking, right? There isn't one boss and everyone else follows orders. It's a team effort. So if you're the lead and I'm one of the team members, I'm going to say something like, we're doing chest compressions. We need to add O2. Great. So let's do it. Or you just do it if you're free to do it. If you're free to hook up the cardiac monitor, you hook up the heart cardiac monitor. So a good team works simpatico, one anticipating the actions of the next person, and everything gets done. It's remarkable how it happens. Any questions about neonatal resuscitation? No. It's really just a matter of practicing it. So in your free lab time, you get the chance to practice neonatal resuscitation. I recommend doing it just exactly as it's written out in the algorithm. And so you'll get good at it.